Hey guys, we're going to get to the show in just a second, but I'd like to take a moment to give a shout out to the sponsor of this episode, and that's Podcorn. So what is Podcorn? If you're looking to do a podcast and you want to monetize it and you want a really simple way to do it, then Podcorn is the answer. And I've been using Podcorn now for several weeks, actually months, and it has been one of the simplest ways to get a sponsor for your podcast. It's extremely easy to use. There are dozens and dozens of opportunities, and it has really helped out my show because prior to coming across Podcorn, it's not easy, right? It's kind of confusing. There's not a very simple way to go and find a sponsor for your show, and Podcorn takes all of the thinking out of it, all of that hard work. And it simplifies the experience and simplifies the process because you just go in and you're able to find what you want, find a sponsor that matches with your audience, submit a proposal, and boom. It's very easy to do. It's podcorn.com. So it's really just a marketplace to connect podcasters to an amazing opportunity. I mean, you can do ads such as reads, interview segments, topical discussions, a ton more, and there's no middleman. So you set your own rates, and then you work with the brand to come up with a plan, and it is extremely easy to use. So you never give up any rights to your podcast, by the way, and they're just there to support you every step of the way. And trust me, this has been my experience with Podcorn. So check them out. I put a link to them in this episode's show notes. So check out podcorn.com today. Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. We're going to get things rolling in just a minute with your Monday Night Raw review. And there's a lot to cover tonight with the Big Show versus Randy Orton seemingly transitioning all the way to Survivor Series. We have Edge giving one of his best promos that he's given maybe in of his career on Monday night. Rey Mysterio and Dominic look for revenge. And Sasha Banks versus Asuka is now set for the Raw Women's Championship at Extreme Rules. Let's get everything started right after this. Are you a guy who normally destroys belts? There's a new virtually indestructible men's belt on Kickstarter called the Belt of Orion. It won't crack at the holes, and it's 100% animal friendly. The secret ingredient is strong material used for the strap. The Mennonites use the same material for their horses' reins and harnesses because it does not crack at the holes over time. The buckle is nickel-free for those of you who have an allergy to nickel. And listen to this. When it's fully funded and after the belt is released into the world in this coming fall of 2020, one tree will be planted for each Belt of Orion sold on the website of truthbelts.com. That's truthbelts.com. So if you're a dude looking for a cool-looking, long-lasting belt, go to Kickstarter and search for Belt of Orion. That's Belt of O-R-I-O-N, where you can snag one of these tough belts at a great price, and you'll be helping animals and the planet. How cool is that? Check out the Belt of Orion on Kickstarter today.
Dynamite Sports. We put the R in sports. Swag from this lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living, blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfamous lifestyle. Dynamite Sports. We put the R in sports. Swagfamous lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living, blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfamous lifestyle.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Alrighty, let's get things rolling for your Monday Night Raw review for last night, which I enjoyed the show. You know, I've said this for many weeks now that as the weeks have gone on, post this, or actually still while we're in this pandemic, and we're in the minimal amount of fans in attendance, I think, to be totally honest with you, that the shows have been very good to average at the worst to very good at times. And last night was one of those good to very good shows in my eyes. And we certainly have some things to talk about with some critiques, as you may expect on this show. You've kind of come to learn that I'm not very shy about critiquing WWE for things that they could be improving on or sloppiness. But I think ultimately, last night was a good show with a minimal amount of sloppiness. And we're going to get to the good, which is a lot of it, the bad, which is some of it, and everything in between in just 1 second. But first, welcome to the show. Those of you that are new, thank you for joining us. You can find us anywhere podcasts are available, and I'm on social media, which is Instagram at WWE underscore podcast, or on Facebook at facebook.com/thewwepodcast. So that's where I'm at. Again, my Twitter is now defunct. I don't expect it to resurrect from the dead. So I would assume that it has rested in peace and it has been buried alive. For let's see how many wrestling puns that I could apply here. What's another one? It's not gonna. We're not gonna kick out, right? Like, we got our finish. Twitter hit its finish on us and we didn't kick out. How about that for all of you wrestling nuts out there? That's pretty much where we're at with Twitter. So, that being said, we're moving forward. We're posting things on Instagram, and I did a little bit of a video story on Instagram, so I'm starting to delve into that. And if you want an ad-free experience, I know many of you are like kind of like me, and you just want a streamlined experience, and you just don't want the ads. I get it. You head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Why? Because on there, for $1 a month, you can get the entire library for an ad free, no hidden anything. It's just $1 and you get access to the entire library plus exclusive content and a shout out on the show. So that's that. And one more quick shout out, and that's to feedspot.com. And you guys should check out the site, because, and the reason I'm shouting them out is because we were named, this podcast was named the number one podcast, wrestling podcast that you should listen to. And very honored to be number one. Definitely check out feedspot.com. And specifically, if you go to blog.feedspot.com, you can head on over and check this out. It's pretty cool. We're number one according to their rankings of the podcast that you should listen to if you're into wrestling. So thank you very much. And we'll hopefully continue that. All right. Well, let's get into Monday Night Raw. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here. Monday Night Raw, which, again, I think was a good show, and we got a lot of progression towards Extreme Rules, which is 3 weeks from Sunday, so it'll be here before you know it. 3 weeks seems like a long time, but to be totally honest, it will go by in a flash, especially when it's summertime, and as things are to start to open up in your areas, hopefully, which means you got more going on, and you just don't pay attention, right? So time seems to go faster in the summertime, and I'm telling you, 3 weeks, it's going to go like that. But we got a lot of new stuff on this show, a lot of new matchups, a lot of let's move forward, right? And you know, we kind of got a little bit of a sidestep for Extreme Rules before SummerSlam. And what I mean by that is a lot of, and I hate to say it, but filler programs that will lead to SummerSlam. And for example, you may be saying, what are you talking about? Dolph Ziggler versus Drew McIntyre, right? That was made official and has been made official for Extreme Rules for the WWE Championship. And Dolph Ziggler comes out and says that basically you're here because of me, and just basically rehashes his it should have been me slogan when Kofi Kingston was WWE Champion. He seems to always just interject himself in situations like this, ultimately coming up short. We all know he's going to come up short. I really don't believe that there is almost any chance of Dolph Ziggler winning, although I hope that at least over the next few weeks, WWE can make me feel like there's a chance. That's their job, and I hope that they can accomplish that. So I'm excited for the match from a wrestling perspective. I'm excited for the match from a in-ring product and visual perspective. I'm not really interested in the story, because there's not much of a story there. I know that Drew and Dolph were tied together at one point. That is a long, long time ago. And Dolph is you know, you wonder what's going through his mind as a person, right? You must know that you have gotten such a shaft over the last 10, 15 years, knowing how good you are, right? Knowing that you can have a good to great match with almost anybody, that you have consistently put on great performances. It's not just that it's a once in a while. Like, he is one of the best WWE has in terms of in-ring ability. He just has it, and he always has. So if I were him, I would be so super frustrated looking at this going, I am so much better than this guy, this guy, and this guy, right? He has to be thinking that, and yet he has not gotten his opportunity with the top belt after all this time that he's been in the WWE. And this is, to me, just another one of those flash-in-the-pan programs for Dolph. And it's a lot like the Kofi Kingston angle. If anyone really believes that Dolph Ziggler is going to take the belt off of Drew McIntyre, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, I just don't know what to say, because it's simply not going to happen. Now, the argument against it, if you were going to try to formulate one, would be that if you're going to do something shocking, right, and you're going to try something off the wall, what better time to try than when there are few fans in the arena and you have the ability to kind of play in the sandbox without mommy and daddy watching, right? Like, that is the argument against it, is there's no better time to try something like this. And maybe Dolph Ziggler does get an opportunity for a month and Drew gets it back. I mean, maybe just to see how crazy the internet explodes or how quickly Twitter gets set on fire if this happens. Hell, I'd be interested to see. But I think a lot of people honestly would be happy for Dolph, because I think there is a fan base out there that gets behind him, because, or at least could get reignited behind him if they decide to put the belt on Dolph and go, oh my God, let's do this. The problem is that even the most ardent fan for Dolph Ziggler, the most supportive fans, have got to be battle weary. I mean, they have to be to the point where you have been strung along so much and the carrot has been put in front of your face so many times and the light switch is turned on and then off again so many times that how can you believe that there's any possibility, given the history of the Dolph Ziggler character, with how quickly or how often he loses? I mean, he lost to Otis after Otis basically did an elbow drop. I mean, it's straight up embarrassing. And Otis is really, I know this is a side topic, and it's so easy to do when you're talking wrestling, but Otis is a character I am really turning sour very, very quickly on. It's almost, again, as if WWE and Vince looked at Otis and saw a funny guy and not much more, and just took it and squeezed all the juice out of it immediately and didn't let it grow, didn't let the fruit get bigger so there's more juice to squeeze, and let it squeeze slowly. And Vince just took it and goes, let's do this, and just did it all at once and made him this funny, or at least attempted funny comedy character that likes to eat food and get food all over him like he's a five-year-old kid sitting at a lunch table. And it's freaking embarrassing, and I'm really souring on the Otis character quickly because of how hard and how quickly, and the presentation of Otis, right? It's the presentation, how they think of Otis and how they think we look at him. And unfortunately, that's not how we look at him. I don't look at him as a guy that has salami all over his stomach or a smoothie all over his beard or whatever nonsensical crap that they like to do with him. But okay, nonetheless, moving on. To kind of close this out with Drew and Dolph. Here's the other key. I love how WWE has really, really kept Drew McIntyre few and far between on Raw. He does not feel overexposed. In fact, I look forward to seeing him and want more of him, which means WWE is doing their job, right? WWE is doing their job because I feel like I'm not getting enough Drew McIntyre. When you're left wanting more, it keeps you coming back to the product. Imagine that philosophy, right? So with Dolph Ziggler, though, it was surprising. The other part of this is that he revealed that since AJ was traded to SmackDown, that the return to Raw was himself and Bobby Roode, or Robert Roode, right? So if you were going to tell me that that is an even trade, I think that you would be lying to yourself or lying to me, because Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler are not an even swap for AJ Styles. I know it's 2-1. I don't care about the math. Look at the value, the star power of both guys. Not exactly half of AJ Styles in terms of name recognition, in terms of star power, in terms of needle moving, in terms of just in-ring performance, although you could argue in Dolph's favor on that. But I just don't think that it's a 2-for-1. It can't be. It's got, to me, it would be like a, it should be like a 6-for-1 for AJ Styles. So we'll see if more follow, but it looks like right now it's a 2-for-1 trade, and that was a terrible, terrible job by Raw. Maybe they should go back to their war room and negotiate like they did this past fall with their god-awful draft that they did. That was just, well, we don't need to get into that. You guys know how I feel. But anyway, I'm looking forward to the match. I think Dolph and Drew could put on a very, very good match. Drew could probably make you, or Dolph can make you believe for the next 3 weeks, and that's cool. And I'm sure Robert Roode is going to come back, and they'll have a couple of beatdowns on Drew. Ultimately, it's going to end in a Claymore victory with Drew holding his belt high. And with Bobby Lashley kind of going by the wayside here and taking a little bit of a break, it seems, as if they're just kind of not knowing what to do with him. I know MVP tried to recruit Apollo Crews again on the VIP lounge, of which I think eventually he will cave. I think Apollo Crews will eventually join MVP and Bobby Lashley. Just keep that in mind as we move along here. Bobby Lashley, I think, is just being prepped for SummerSlam. And what is he going to do at SummerSlam? It's what I think, what I've said all along and what I still think is going to happen. Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre versus Brock Lesnar. So that is how I think it's going to go. Now, time will tell, but I think that they are just kind of pushing Lashley to the side. This is why I'm calling it filler. It's a filler, get me to the destination of SummerSlam match. So that's that. All right, moving on to the next item here, something I really loved. And boy, did I love this. Edge. Edge, man, my man Edge has been, you know, he's had some really good promos since his return. Really, really good promos since his return. Especially the one leading up to WrestleMania when he was sitting, I think, on a chair in a locker room or a dimly lit locker room or something. This one was very unique in terms of the setting with Edge sitting in a corner of a ring. That was pretty damn cool. I can't remember the last time somebody has done that in terms of the promo was done, and like with just a spotlight on him, but in a corner of a ring. Awesome. I mean, that in of itself added a lot to the ambiance of the promo. But having Edge kind of give us a heads up that he's going through a character transformation, and that Randy Orton has now brought something out of him that wasn't there before, or at least hasn't come out since his return to the WWE in-ring competition anyway, is that the evil side of him, that the dark side, that the man that will do anything to get what he wants is now back because of Randy Orton. And that is the Rated R Superstar. And I love how, yes, he told us that. So he very eloquently and creatively told us that he is going through an evolution of a darker version of the Edge that we've seen since he's come back. Awesome. He's also kind of creeped me out. I mean, I've been watching wrestling promos for however long, 20 plus years, and he got me creeped out talking about how he's going to bleed or he's going to weave his way through every facet of Randy Orton's life. That he's going to have to go to bed, look at his wife, kiss his wife goodnight, and look in her eyes and know that Edge is going to do what he's going to do, and that he has what's coming to him. And just the entire promo was just, it was captivating. Edge was absolutely captivating. I believe every word he says. And it's so difficult in today's environment, don't care what promotion you're looking at, to be able to, as a seasoned fan, as many of you are, to know that you're watching a product that's not you know, that the men and women aren't truly fighting one another. And you know that. But to still get captivated in the promo is, it's such a compliment to Edge to be able to do that. And he freaked me out. He's got that, those eyes. His eyes are freaking money. His eyes are money. If you remember when he returned at the Royal Rumble, the first thing you looked at when Edge came through the smoke were his eyes. And his eyes told you everything you needed to know. Everything. And the same thing here. Edge's eyes, it's almost as like he doesn't have to cut a promo. He could sit there and just stare at the camera and tell you what he wants to say without actually opening his mouth. That's how good his eyes are in promos. So I'm loving it. I love how he talked about what he did to Jay, i.e. Christian. How what he did to him, and that he's going to come back and tear him apart. And I can't wait. He didn't give any kind of timeline. He just alluded to get your sleep while you can. And he didn't say when he's going to be back, of which if I was going to surprise my opponent, I wouldn't tell him either. I still believe it would be a Royal Rumble. I still believe it could be the Royal Rumble time. I know that that's 6 months away, but given the extent of this injury, from what I understand, it could be 6 to 9 months. WWE oftentimes, though, gives extended timelines and inflated timelines so that when the individual comes back, it's almost a surprise, or it's even more exciting, or that they healed even sooner. So I wouldn't be surprised if Edge comes back sooner and that this injury isn't maybe as severe as they put on, and the recovery time maybe isn't as long as that WWE put on. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's 4 months. Three, I think, would be really, I mean, he'd have to be Superman. But I'm still eyeing the Royal Rumble. When Randy Orton comes in, dominates the Rumble, you have Edge in the back of your mind, and Randy Orton comes in and RKOs and punts and just is a despicable human being, and Edge's music hits. That's how I think this happens, leading to a program from January till April of Randy Orton and Edge, part three. And that's how I think this is going to go, if the timeline is indeed true and WWE is not inflating their time just to kind of throw us off the path. So anyway, Edge, you killed it on Raw. He might have been the segment of the night. I mean, he certainly was the promo of the night. He has been a joy to watch since his return. I've loved it. And now you got Big Show standing up for him as he did on Monday night with Randy Orton, who seems to be his next opponent. This is filler number two, right? Filler number two for Extreme Rules is the Big Show versus Randy Orton. While that's not official, I think that's where we're headed, and I'm cool with it. Big Show is a guy that there was a time where it was just too much. Like, him and Kane were in, it seems like, every main event, and it was overexposed, and you were just getting absolutely physically ill to see Big Show and Kane. And now it's kind of like, with The Undertaker presumably gone from in-ring competition, you start to appreciate these legacy stars even more. And that's the case with the Big Show. And yes, Big Show has turned face to heel to face to heel to face to heel more than anyone in the history of the business. But Big Show standing up for Orton, and Orton and Ric Flair retreating, was really, really powerful, I think, because it showed just like how cowardice Randy Orton is. And that's such a brilliant part of his character. And I really, I love what Randy Orton's done. And I praised him with Mary Grater this past weekend on our huge, long, almost 3-hour show, which, by the way, if you haven't listened to, it's a must listen. This past Sunday that we talked and covered wrestling, and it was a 3-hour conversation. So probably the longest show in the history of this show. So how about that? If you love long form audio, boom, check out this past one with Mary as we did a week in review. But nonetheless, so this segment with Randy Orton and Big Show can turn it on when he wants to turn it on. And he's always been a good promo. Big Show has never been, you know, his in-ring ability speaks for itself. It is what it is. Big Show, you know, is limited from the get-go. But Big Show can cut a promo that you believe. He can cut a promo that you understand. It's easy to follow. and you have some kind of substance to it. You feel it. And Big Show did that. And Randy Orton backed down after he was challenged to a fight by Big Show. And then Ric Flair seems to have now once again embraced himself with the Randy Orton character. And it's half of Evolution, as Randy said. And so I'm loving that. And a little side note, too. When Ric Flair was out there at the beginning, and it was advertised that Ric Flair was going to present he was going to anoint Randy Orton as the greatest wrestler in the world, right? The best wrestler, whatever adjective that was. And Ric Flair, who seems to have been poisoned by the WWE language, the language police there, he just could not say the word wrestler. For one of the best professional wrestlers, a true professional wrestler, traditional professional wrestler in the history of the world, to be brainwashed or possibly told that he can't say the word wrestler. He just kept saying performer, performer, performer. He could not say the word. He was allergic to the word wrestler. One of the greatest wrestlers of all time. My thought is that he probably should have been saying the word wrestler. And the reason I say that is because it was advertised like that. And Randy Orton said it. I don't know why Rick was allergic to the word wrestler. It's ironic that Ric Flair, and of all the people in the world, could not say the word wrestler. I don't know if he has just been since his retirement, been hammered into his head that you don't say the word wrestler. You say performer, because we're all freaking magicians up there. You're not a performer. Okay. Performers are like community theater. Performers are magicians, right? Don't tell me this is a performer. That's such a soft word to use. That's such a word of avoidance, isn't it? It's such a I can guarantee you, if you looked up the word wrestler, that the word performer is not a synonym of the word wrestler and vice versa. So it's just such a word of avoidance, and it tells you all you need to know about the ideology of WWE and how they want to be perceived. The performers, good God. But that's what Ric Flair did. And everyone else said wrestler. I don't know why Ric Flair couldn't. It was just an interesting side note. I'm like, hey, Rick, can we stop? Okay, is Randy Orton going to come out and pull a rabbit out of his hat? Or is he going to take a bow? Like, what is this, right? Come on, Rick. Get it together. All right. So moving on here. Nia Jax in Charlotte. Nia Jax was sitting in a chair in the middle of the ring. And she's cutting a promo, and she's talking about how she was screwed because of a biased referee, even though she's the one that antagonized and physically put her hands on the referee, and you would have lost anyway because you would have been DQ'd, so I guess you kind of pick your poison. Either way, you're losing that match. But anyway, so she talks about how Charlotte is the one who just gets handed everything, and that she has earned her spot, and out comes Charlotte. And then Nia Jax attacks her that the same way that everyone has attacked her for years now, which is extremely unoriginal, about how you are here because you're Ric Flair's daughter, right? And then Charlotte turns it on Nia, of which many times she's turned it on everybody else, that no, I'm not Ric Flair's daughter. Ric Flair is Charlotte's father, right? So yeah, we've seen this routine many times. I mean, can we move away from this? Can we move away from the whole thought about or the whole attack, the whole path of Charlotte getting everything she needs or wants because of Rick? I mean, can we please? It's been used many, many times. We all know, we all thought it at first, and now it's kind of like, okay, we played this out. Can we move on to something else? And Charlotte's, rebuttal beyond, I'm not Ric Flair's daughter. Ric Flair is known as Charlotte's father. Okay, we've heard it. Is that she said that, did my father help me beat Asuka at WrestleMania? No, but he helped you get there, right? You're the reason, or he's the reason that you even are here. So I guess the argument would have been that, hey, Charlotte, no, he didn't actually compete in the match, but he certainly opened the door for you to get to that match. had it not been for his last name. I mean, that wasn't a great argument, Charlotte, but whatever. I don't know if it was on the fly or written or whatever it may be. But so Nia Jax and Charlotte battle. Nia ends up injuring the arm of Charlotte during the little scuffle. And then Charlotte has to compete later that night against Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship, which is Charlotte's 67th championship opportunity since she's come up to the main roster. Yep, that is true. That was presented by Mary Grainger this past week. That's 67 championship matches. That's about 10 matches per year for the championship of some kind every year. You know, this match between Asuka and Charlotte was not very long. It was damn good, but it wasn't long. I hope to see in them in a little bit more of a long-form match at some point in the near future. They just have great chemistry. They're physical. Asuka's killing it right now. And so Asuka ends up cleanly tapping out Charlotte. Now, the out for Charlotte would be Nia Jax is the one who injured my arm, and therefore that's why I lost the match. So that's how Charlotte's protected. Charlotte's always protected, and this is no exception. Yes, Asuka got the clean win. There were no shenanigans. But had it not been for Nia Jax, would Asuka have gotten the win, right? So there's the protection for Charlotte, the untouchable one in WWE right now. You think Roman Reigns was bad? Those of you that think Roman Reigns was shoved down our throats, and I am on that bandwagon. I've been on it, and I'm proud to be on it, and I stand by it. But boy, imagine if Roman Reigns got the Charlotte Flair treatment. You think that she's the Charlotte Flair? Or you think that Charlotte Flair is the Roman Reigns of the women's division? She's like the Roman Reigns on steroids edition of the women's division. I guess that's probably not a good analogy with wrestling and steroids, but you get my drift, right? It's like Roman Reigns times 10 in the women's division. I've said for a long time, like, they need to do something with Charlotte. I don't know what it is, because it seems every time I turn around, she's in a championship match or she's holding a championship. It's a little bit much. Like, she's saturated all three brands at this point. I don't know what to do with her. Repackage her, turn her dark, change her character a little bit, tweak it. Because apparently now Charlotte's back to babyface, I guess, by default. Charlotte's also one of the ones that keeps flopping back and forth. Keep her heel. God's sakes. Like, she's playing the babyface with Nia Jax, but I guess she's the heel with Asuka. Am I missing that? I think that is something that is a little bit odd. I've never seen anybody in a dual program at the same time that they're playing both heel and babyface. It's bizarre. They don't know what to do with Charlotte, and I don't know how they don't know. It's very clear to me. Charlotte is a heel, period. Period. And they go, well, I mean, she's respected. She's a great performer. Yeah, well, she's easily dislikable. You can't call yourself the queen, come out in a ripoff of your dad's robe, and talking about having everyone bow to you and expect people to cheer. It's not a likable trait. And her voice is not exactly, you know, soothing. Right, so she's got a lot of intangibles that you just go, hey, easily a heel. And she's been, you could bring up the fact that, yeah, she's here because of her dad, which happens all the time. And so she's the entitled, spoiled one that got the door open for her when she didn't really earn her spot. I mean, that's the logic anyway, that why she could be a heel and should stay a heel. But I digress. So Asuka is going to be facing somebody else at Extreme Rules, somebody out of the blue, and we're going to get to that person in just a minute, but we're going to take a quick break and get to that and a lot more. Stay right here.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
So we all know how important it is today to stay healthy and safe. And right now, there's a solution out there for both individuals and businesses to keep the air around you safe, to be able to create an ionic shield around your body that eliminates viruses, bacteria, airborne pollutants. It's essentially the new face mask. Again, It eliminates 99.9% of viruses, bacteria, and germs in the air and on all surfaces that uses a patented technology. And recent FDA tests have proved this purifier that will eliminate 99.9% of allergens like dust, mold, spores, pet dander, bacteria, and it's called Fresh Air. So how do you get this? Where do you get it? It's at Volara.com, VOLLARA.com/aerodynamics. That's VOLLARA.com/aerodynamics, all one word. Or you can call Tony Durham himself, 571-260-8641. That's 571-260-8641. Guys, this is not the time to be messing around with your health. And this product has been proven by the FDA to work, keep your air safe and clean, whether you're a business owner or you want to use it for your personal space. Head on over to Volara.com/aerodynamics or call directly at 571-260-8641.
Dynamite Sports. We put the in sports. Swag from this lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living, blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfamous lifestyle. Dynamite Sports. We put the in sports. Swagfamous lifestyle. Defined as aspirational living, blended with an unquenchable taste for the arts, fashion, sports, and technology. One having an authentic display towards this swagfamous lifestyle.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, let's get into it. Let's get to Asuka's next opponent. That is Sasha Banks. As Sasha Banks comes out with Bayley and they gloat, and Bayley does her da boss, da blueprint, all that stuff, which she's doing just a fantastic job, by the way. Bayley is, and I think most of you out there probably agree with me to some degree about Bayley just starting to feel like she's her own character now. Like, she doesn't feel like she's playing anything, and she feels much, much, much more comfortable in this role. Sasha alludes to the fact that she has one belt and that, you know, she's jealous of Bayley's second belt, and that's why she said that she's officially going to be challenging for a championship at Extreme Rules, and it's Asuka. So let me get this straight. And first of all, let me just say I like that, because it teases the notion, the feeling, the anticipation of Sasha and Bayley splitting up and Sasha finally turning on Bayley, and we get the long-awaited turn and Sasha's the face and finally dethrones Bayley. So it was a nice tease. I bought into it and I'm like, okay, are they just going to have a friendly battle here? Is Bayley going to run away and not accept her challenge? And that's where the crack starts. They're obviously playing the long game here with Bayley and Sasha. If you think they're rushing this, I think you're thinking wrong. There's no need to rush this. I think they want it in front of fans, the blow off of this in front of fans. So I think it's going to be the end of the year before we see this finally dismantle and destruct in front of our eyes, in front of live fans, real live fans, in a setting with more than, like, you know, 30 people in the audience. I think it's going to be a big moment when it happens. So I'm totally cool with the long game with these two. But here's the other thing, and I guess I could debate myself on this. With Sasha just officially challenging Asuka, who comes out and immediately accepts, she is the SmackDown, or she is the WWE Raw, one half of the WWE Raw Women's Tag Team Champions. That means you can float between any show, Raw, SmackDown, NXT. But does that also allow you to challenge for another championship on another show? And if you win that championship, does that mean you're automatically drafted to that brand's championship? Like, there's just a lot of weirdness with that. The cover, again, the cover and the battle, the rebuttal to my own argument would be, But that's what allows them to be there, is that they have those championship belts, that they are allowed to float between the shows. It was never discussed. It was never talked about whether or not somebody in a show, just because they're a champion, women's tag team champion, are they allowed to challenge for other championships while they're there? And I guess the answer is yes. So, I mean, again, I'm not going off on this. It's just, I'm kind of in the middle of the road of like, it's kind of like, how does that work? Because if Sasha wins, which she won't, but if she wins, how does that work with the championship? Does she automatically get drafted to SmackDown? I don't know, but it is kind of an intriguing argument to be made of Sasha, Bayley, both holding each brand's respective women's championship and being the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. Like, imagine that. Like, how would that work? I mean, I'd be very interested to see how that works. I think Bayley will probably inadvertently cost Sasha the championship, and she'll pretend to be okay with it. That's my early call on that match. But it is certainly interesting. It's a very intriguing matchup. It's new. It's fresh, right? Extreme Rules is all about the one-offs. Extreme Rules is all about the new opponents that aren't going to last long. It's the, let's just do this to get to SummerSlam. That's what this is to me. That's all it is. And don't get me wrong, I'm looking forward to Extreme Rules because of so many different things and so many different matchups with Asuka and Sasha, and we have Drew and Dolph and presumably Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins. So, and that's the next thing I want to talk about is Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio and Dominic, because this has been a storyline that has exceeded my expectations. I've never been a huge Rey Mysterio fan, I'll be honest. And I don't mean a fan of not respecting his work. I don't mean not being a fan of his character throughout the years, of respecting his character or understanding the legacy he's left. He's a true legend. And he's like the most famous luchador ever. He is one of the, if not the most famous Mexican wrestler to ever lace up a pair of boots and put on a mask. I understand all that. But I've never been a fan of his pandering, soft character. I mean, I have never been a fan of that. He felt very much like John Cena, but a foot shorter and a mask on. And I mean, like, he's just very, he's a big panderer. He doesn't seem to have an edge to him. He's just never been my favorite character because he never had a set. It seemed like he never had a set. And I remember him coming out. Anybody else remember this? He'd come out. This is probably mid-2000s, I would think. Mid-2000s sometime. And he would come out and he would have a camera. Like, he'd have a camcorder with him and he's recording fans as he's out there. And he'd wear, like, you know, ridiculous masks with, like, a, you know, a two-foot-high mohawk and all that. Just, I was never, I don't know. It just rubbed me the wrong way of pandering. And that's the way, only way I can describe Rey Mysterio's character. You know, again, it sounds like I'm diminishing the man. He has been an absolute legend and has completely, completely outkicked his expectation of his return here to WWE. I did not expect much. I figured the mileage on his body was too much, that his knee injuries had pretty much cemented his career as all but done. And to have him back now and doing what he's doing with Seth Rollins is awesome. I'm really, really digging this. And Seth Rollins is starting week by week to really, really dive into his character with the faraway looks, his complete delusional mentality of doing things for the greater good and sacrificing people. All of these things just are great. And Seth has been, I think, revived since WrestleMania and since Money in the Bank, those two huge losses to Drew and to Kevin Owens. And I think he's done a nice job. WWE Creative has done a nice job of making him feel dangerous again. He's got his group back. I don't know where AOP are, but I'm sure they're not far behind. I'm loving what he's doing. And Dominic being interjected here is nice. And having Rey Mysterio defend his son and the family bond, all that is, it's well done. It is well done, and I'm loving. I'm really loving it. I mean, A plus to everybody. I have nothing. I really don't have any critiques on this. I don't. So I'm looking forward to a presumed match of some sort at Extreme Rules. I don't know if it's Dominic one on one with Seth, or if it's Rey against Seth, or Rey and Dominic against the trio. But you had Humberto Carrillo and Aleister Black make the save. So that would be a 4-on-3 advantage for the babyfaces. That's not how you do it. That's not how the math works with wrestling, right? It's usually an advantage to the heels in numbers. So I don't know how this is all going to shake out. Maybe Seth ends up getting back AOP, and that's how it's a 5-on-4. I mean, one way or the other, it's not going to be a 4-on-3 match at Survivor Series, at Extreme Rules. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but it is a nice touch right now, giving really giving Humberto Carrillo and Aleister Black a little bit of main event time, because that was the final segment of the show. So let's move on. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this. Okay, one thing that was, you know, I'm a bit torn on is the whole Street Profits, right? The Street Profits and the Viking Raiders, or the Viking Profits, whatever kind of weird combo they want to talk about. Now, these two teams have been belittled to silly games and track and field events, all that stuff. And I know some of you like it, and that's great. I don't. I think it's amateur. I think it's, let's run away from pro wrestling. We got to have a comedy segment. I see comedy in some of these guys. Oh, they're opposites. That's funny. No, it's not. Let's get them in the ring, what they're supposed to be doing. And it's diminishing the value of the tag team belts. But this past week, they had a good match. It was the Viking Raiders versus the Street Profits, with the Street Profits retaining the Raw tag team titles. They were friends before the match. They ended up being friends after the match. So no bad blood there. And so that was good. And then we got an attack from Angel Garza and Andrade, with Zelina Vega back in charge here. Loved it. I think Zelina Vega, I mean, anytime she's on the TV is a great, great time, because she has a presence. Like I said, she's like one of the most authentic managers I've ever seen. And I hope she gets more time like she did right after WrestleMania. She's kind of been hidden for a few weeks now. And I think that they're missing out. Or they're just kind of in a holding pattern for what they want to do with Andrade and Angel Garza. So we got Angel Garza and Andrade attacking the Street Profits. Clearly, that's the next tag team matchup here. We immediately got the answer to who the next opponents are for the Street Profits. Hopefully they move the hell away from the Viking Raiders, and there's no more nonsense, right? I don't need them going bowling or golfing or playing, you know, rum or whatever. I don't want them doing anything other than wrestling, right? I mean, you can have backstage segments, but don't give me this, you know, amateur stuff. So it seems as if things are going to get a little more serious for the Street Profits, and they're going to get Angel Garza and Andrade, who are a real threat to those championship belts, a real threat. And it was nice that WWE noted that Angel Garza and Andrade have put their differences aside, and that they're going to be focused on winning the tag team titles. And that's a good thing. And so are they going to win them and beat the Street Profits? I mean, who knows? I said they're a true threat, because I think they are. I never thought the Viking Raiders were, because there's no real drama there. Does anybody really care about the Viking Raiders versus Street Profits? Friends versus friends? I don't. So I'm looking forward to this match. And again, it's hard to talk about Raw, and it's hard to talk about the positioning of the WWE's champions right now without really bringing up the world events. And so I'll leave it at this. I'll just leave that to you guys to think about. And I'm not going to give you any kind of sway one way or the other. You guys can use your own brains. Do you think WWE is being swayed by the current racial issues in America that's dividing the world in half, about keeping their African American or black? I don't know. They're black, right? Like, I don't know how that's offensive. Like, I'm white. I know some people, oh, it's black. Oh, you don't call them colored. No, you got to call them African American. I don't know what to call them. I'm going to call them black, because that's what the color is. They're black champions. Do you think that WWE will keep them as champions longer than they normally would have had this George Floyd incident not set the world on fire. Think about that. I mean, I think if you guys listen to my show, you know my take on this, but I'm interested to hear what you think. Do you think WWE will be keeping their champions that are black, their black athletes, champions longer, or giving those that may not have an opportunity before an opportunity now? Just a thought. I have no problem with it. And those of you thinking, oh, you're in God Almighty, if anyone wants to get in a racist conversation, please, let's not do that, right? That's such a lazy analysis. When anybody talks about anything that you don't agree with, racist. It's a lazy analysis, right? It's just like the God of gaps. If something's wrong, it's because of racism. Like, let's dig into it, right? Like, does any data support this, right? But back to wrestling. See how easily you go off the rails? Just curious. Email me at realwwpodcast@gmail.com, please. Very interested to hear, because it's a really worth diving into. I think it's hard not to get into political stuff with that answer, but interested to hear. Okay. Moving on, which there's not a whole lot left of Raw that I wanted to cover. Let's see. I mean, I know Bobby Lashley did show up. I mean, when I said he went into hiding, he's just kind of taking a step back, right? He was going to face, R-Truth was going to fight Akira Tozawa and his ninjas to defend his 24/7 title, but Bobby Lashley ended up showing up and bulldozing through the ninjas and then kind of ragdolled R-Truth around in the full Nelson. So, it's just kind of like keeping Lashley out there, but he's taking a step back from Drew, at least for this month. That's my thought. Natalya defeating Liv Morgan. Okay, I don't know what to think about that. Liv Morgan has kind of been an absolute joke since her return, and it's kind of a shame. It's a shame because her vignettes gave me hope. And Liv Morgan is somebody that I think has a bright future, because I don't think we've seen the best of her yet. And she just continues to lose match after match. I mean, she beat Lana a couple of times, but she was revealed as Lana's lover, but then beat her and then has lost to Liv Morgan or to Ruby Riott a number of times. So she's kind of been just going by the wayside. And now she loses to Natalya, of which this doesn't really mean a whole lot in this perspective of things. It just doesn't. But I guess the only good thing about this was that Liv Morgan, well, she submitted to the sharpshooter and kicked off a celebration with her new friend. I mean, apparently Lana is her new friend. So that's that. I thought this was dead. All right. Well, that concludes my Raw review. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It's always a blast to come on here and talk wrestling. Tomorrow night, I'm debating, because I'm trying to get people on the show or somebody on the show to talk about the final chapter of The Undertaker's Last Ride. So I may do a normal wrestling nostalgia in lieu of a full review of The Undertaker's Last Ride docuseries, because that is a long discussion. So I probably will be doing a normal wrestling nostalgia tomorrow night. I've gotten some ideas from some of you out there that have been loyal listeners. So I perhaps will be doing a traditional wrestling nostalgia night tomorrow night. And then you guys know the rest of the week. It's NXT and AEW reviews. Your HSP SmackDown review, full SmackDown review. I don't conduct any SmackDown reviews. I touch on it during our weekend review on our weekend show, which is sometimes Saturday or Sunday, depending on what's going on with the co-hosts and my life. I don't do a full SmackDown review. It's our great team with Brian and Greg, who do an awesome job of reviewing SmackDown, and you guys can catch them every single Saturday. It's dropped in the morning on Saturday, and they do an awesome job. So a lot more audio for you guys this week. You can head on over to the podcast website at wwepodcast.com for all of your wrestling needs and audio and video that's coming. I promise. I'm working on that. I do say that, but I really am working on it. Instagram at WWE_podcast, Facebook at the WWE podcast on Facebook. And if you like us, give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that podcasts allow for it. It does help out the show a lot. So with all that being said, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.